Hello, everyone. I'm Trent Luce. Welcome to another Red Shirt Friday edition of Rural Route, the program where we gather every day at this time. Well, we do it Monday through Friday anyway. And what we do when we gather is continue to address the issues between food production and food consumption on this, I'm going to call it, Sean Smith, a significant Red Shirt Friday because it's April 19th, and it was April 19th, 1775, which ultimately became heard as the shot around the world. The Revolutionary War was on, and all started at Concord. Maybe today we've got another war. Well, there's no doubt, maybe, Sean Smith, that we have a war taking place, although maybe artillery is a little different, coming to us from Colorado and recognized as one of the most prominent election integrity authorities in the nation. How are you?
I'm great, Trent. Thanks for asking.
And a veteran. Before we jump into election integrity, why don't you just put in a nutshell, if you would, your time. It was the Air Force, correct?
It was. That's right. I was about 25, a little over 25 and a half years, mostly in space and missile operations. I did a lot of operational planning. I did a lot of operational testing. Operational testing is sort of the last line of defense before a system is put into full rate production or fielded. It's to protect, you know, the military department from getting a lemon, and it's protect the people in field from getting something that's going to, you know, kill them when they try to use it or not be able to fight or not be able to be maintain. And I did a lot of what's called special technical operations. It's using, you know, sensitive capabilities, planning for those, employing those, helping design and develop those, and wrapped up my career as the senior military advisor, helping oversee operational testing of all space systems except for satellite communications. When I retired, I stayed on for about a year as a contractor, helping with a project called adversarial assessment, where we were looking at what information had been stolen and compromised out of U.S. national security organizations by foreign adversaries, and then using that information to figure out what they understood about our capabilities, what they no longer understood or what they didn't understand yet, and what capabilities we had were no longer effective because they'd been compromised.
Did you want to comment on the current status of the United States military?
Well, I'm not particularly vocal about it, but I haven't been silent about it. I think it's been deliberately sabotaged. That's my perspective. Mm-hmm. You know, I watched what they did with the COVID vaccines, the mandate for that. There was no cause for it in the readiness effects, which is the only legitimate cause to do something like that that could potentially affect the health, you know, those kind of unknowns. There was no reason for it. So they got sort of a double whammy. They got a lot of people injected with something, which I think is very clearly injuring them and probably going to kill many of them. And then they also got to purge people who would stand up when they saw something that was immoral and illegal, which certainly the shot was, because there was nothing but an EUA, early use authorization available on one particular experimental vaccine. It wasn't the one that they were given, and the Comirnaty was the specific one that they were given. It wasn't the one that they had the EUA on. And then we've now sent, you know, massive quantities from our stockpile of munitions overseas into both Israel and into Ukraine, at the same time that the president depleted our strategic petroleum reserve, which is, you know, what tanks and planes run on. And at the same time that they've gone through the ranks. I mean, at all times, general officers, especially above the rank of major general, are politicized. And to some extent, you know, they have to have constituencies in Congress, and they have, you know, affinities for particular political sort of leanings. You really want all your military to be apolitical and nonpartisan. But in fact, they develop affinities. But this is not like anything we've seen before. What we've seen starting in about 2010 was increasing politicization of senior civilian positions within the department. And then it has a ripple effect. So you end up with Not that you don't have any good general officers, you certainly do, and I know many of them, although I've been disappointed, you know, that they did not fall on their swords, so to speak, over issues like COVID vaccines. You know, they couldn't see that that was clearly immoral to convey an order about that, or to try to coerce military members into it. But anyway, you know, you now have a military command element that will tolerate things like what Matt Lohmeyer was, you know, thrown out of the Air Force effectively for and removed from command. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but he was a former pilot and became a Space Force squadron commander and then wrote a book about the implementation of cultural Marxism within the ranks of the military, which really just have just undermined the values of the military. You know, that the truth is what the military ought to be about is lethality and nothing else. You know, lethality is king and everything else is, I like to say, a word that comes, you know, as a byproduct of feeding steers. But anyway, so that's not what we have now. What we have now is a lot of emphasis on diversity, equity, and inclusion in the military ranks, you know, to the point where you have people who are mentally ill, you know, trans individuals who need, you know, they need mental health care. And instead, they're being put in positions of leadership and lecturing other military officers about, you know, how to be more inclusive of people who are mentally ill. So, yeah, it's a very dangerous time. I don't think, I mean, they're still very capable. Obviously, we have a lot of good systems and a lot of good people, but I don't have very much confidence, maybe no confidence in the leadership of our military.
We still have capable, willing, and committed boots on the ground. But Sean, to me, what has taken place, and I can't date my awareness back to 2010 because I just wasn't immersed in it. But since 2020, the level of the political whims of the high level of the Department of Defense and within the military is actually mind-boggling. You think that they are removed from that, but we have seen that in our face almost to the point where it's like they want us to be reject or completely demoralized by what we see in those political statements.
Yeah, I think what you see is somebody who has power and is not in any fear of losing power and is just doing, you know, it's Lord Acton, you know, on the big stage. Power corrupts and absolute corrupts absolutely. So I think they believe they're in a position of absolute power and they're just doing whatever they feel like doing. And, you know, there's obviously not firm moral grounding. They have ideas. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't call them ideals exactly, but they're not moral.
Which ultimately led you into you and I even having this discussion again, which was there were some things that you were hearing about the 2020 election. I believe it was 2020. It was the first time that you were like, that doesn't really make sense. I need to go dig into this. You want to just give us a nutshell of that?
Sure. Yeah, prior to the November 2020 election, I had no involvement in elections whatsoever. You know, had been totally apolitical, wasn't even a member of a registered political party. I wasn't a registered member of a political party in my entire life prior to, I think, early 22 is when I actually joined the political party, joined the Republican Party. But I couldn't have told you, you know, I'd done a lot of research in my career. I spent, I don't know, thousands of hours, did a tour at Rand Corporation and Project Air Force, did a lot of research for Joint Staff and Office of Secretary of Defense while I was assigned in DC at the Office of Secretary of Defense. And a lot of my work went to them prior to that. The reports that we wrote when I was doing that project after I retired and stayed on as a contractor for a year went to the highest levels in the federal government, including the office of the, you know, president. The guy I was working with went and briefed the White House on our reports. And, but I never looked into elections and never looked into election systems. I couldn't have told you a single thing about any of the vendors or any of the equipment being used. The only thing I knew about elections was the ballots that I voted, which had been almost entirely, no, they had been entirely absentee ballots because I'd been until actually 2018. When, because I had retired from the military, I had to become a resident of the state of Virginia. So I voted in person. So anyway, on the election day, I read an article about voter turnout. And it just didn't seem intuitive to me that what they were reporting on these huge numbers of voter turnout were accurate. And I thought I should go read about that. And so I started reading. I pulled down data from the Secretary of State's databases in Colorado, and I pulled up population data. And then I looked at rates of change, not just for that election, but looked between elections. I want to say going back to 2010. And so I did some regression analysis on voter registration rates versus population and then turnout by elections and the way they changed in between general, coordinated, and the midterm elections. And I came to the conclusion after seeing in one instance, 140% increase in primary turnout between like elections, that something was really wrong with our voter rolls. And from the Secretary of State side, I started reading about our voting systems. And I'm not, as I've said many times, I'm not a cyber professional. I'm not a cyber expert, although
John
I have
Smith,
really
I'm going to interrupt there and let you know that
sure.
You're not a cyber professional, but we will find out what it is exactly when we get back with more Roll Route after this. Welcome back. Roll Route, Trent Luce on a Red Shirt Friday. Sean Smith joining us. Some say the most authentic election integrity person there is. We'll check with others on the list to see what they think of that. But you started to tell me, and I had to so rudely interrupt you, that you're not really your expertise. You didn't feel like your expertise was cybersecurity, but yet you're pretty good at data. So that's what you're looking at. You're looking at data. And when you got 140% increased voter turnout, well, that data don't fly so good. Pun intended with the Air
No.
Force, right?
Correct. Yeah, it doesn't add up. There's something wrong there and something need to be investigated. But what I am an expert in is testing. You know, I've prescribed testing requirements, Department of Defense wide. I have reviewed and rejected test plans from really great people who did really bad testing on some of our really critical weapon systems, you know, things that cost billions and billions of dollars. Those are the kind of things that I was responsible to make sure were adequately tested. And so I understand the testing of critical systems and I understand the cyber threat very well. And, you know, I helped write some of the first procedures for computer network defense at the operational level in the Department of Defense. And I've been intimately familiar with the kind of threats posed by nation states and by what are called advanced persistent threats, which are the sorts of threats that everybody's familiar with, like Hollywood and movies like War Games, where you have, you know, kids that look for opportunistic vulnerabilities. And there are definitely those because our systems are too complex. But those aren't the real threats. The real threats are nation state level campaigns involving tens of thousands of people that spend all day long, every day, year after year, and have for decades now, just trying to penetrate, compromise, exfiltrate data from, and take advantage of vulnerabilities within US and Western technology. They've been at it for a good long time, and I understand that threat well. So I really know testing, and I really know the cyber threat. So when I started reading our voting system technical manuals, and I'm very used to reading technical manuals. That's part of what my duties were when I was doing oversight for operational testing of space systems for Secretary of Defense under the Director of Operational Test Evaluation. I read hundreds of technical manuals, and it was my job to know the details of them and how the systems were supposed to operate and what sort of assumptions they made about their capabilities and assertions they made, and then test the assertions and make sure that the assumptions were valid. So when I looked at our voting system technical manuals and saw for the first time what equipment they were using, I thought at first, well, surely there must be more testing. You know, I read the test plans and the test reports, and I thought this can't be all there is. And then I found out it was all there was. And that's really when I knew that we were in a lot of trouble, because the systems were built either to be compromised or so poorly and incompetently, with such dereliction of duty that they must be assumed to be compromised. And since, of course, we found out that they are compromised, so that's no surprise to me.
So that's all an awareness that came about ultimately 4 years ago now. What's changed? Where have we eliminated the compromise?
We have not eliminated the compromise, although there is a groundswell. Some people, you know, Sharona Bishop calls it a prairie fire, and that's about right. I'm with Cause of America. It's a nonpartisan nonprofit that does nothing but election integrity work, trying to support grassroots groups and people in states. And we call it Operation Victory Garden. There is kind of a resurgence in hand counting by citizens. So we've got at this point maybe over 1,000 trainers trained nationwide who are now training people in their counties and precincts, neighboring counties, on how to hand count paper ballots. It's not some kind of, you know, dark art. If you listen to the election industry, they'll tell you that it's less accurate and less efficient. In fact, they'll tell you that it's almost impossible. And the reason they'll tell you that is because they've tried to make it impossible. So ranked choice voting, for example, will make it impossible, really practically speaking, to hand count paper ballots for elections. They've aggregated a lot of elections that used to be separate. So you used to be able to have separate municipal or local, you know, bond issue and then state elections. Now they jam everything together. And so you end up with these really long, complicated ballot cards with, you know, dozens and dozens of races and hundreds of choices. Those are a lot more difficult to hand count. The ideal would be to separate them the way they do, for example, in South Korea, where you have really just one race on a single ballot card. They color code them and then you count them separately by hand, just like they hand count paper ballots for federal elections in Canada and France, other countries that don't want to be corrupted, at least by voting systems.
So
there's that. There's been a lot of, I don't know if you're familiar with the current petition for writ of certiorari up at the Supreme Court.
Before you mention that, I just want to add that my wife is one of those individuals who has been trained and was trained to be a trainer. And I got to be honest, Sean, when she went to Omaha for that session. And before she left home, she was like, I'm sure this is going to be a waste of time. I'm just going to go down there because I feel like I should. And when she got home, she was so fired up about, number one, how easy it was. Number two, how plausible it is. And number three, how essential we need to get this done. I mean, it was just like this whole stigma of, oh, we got 330 million Americans. There's no way we can officially count them. And we got to have the cast vote and the total vote because people want to know at 10:30 before they go to bed who won. I don't care if it takes 30 months. Well, I do 30 months, a little extreme, but 30 days. I want the right answer. I don't want who was selected for me to represent me. So there needs to continue to be this movement to hand count.
Yeah, amen. We see that everywhere. I was at the Colorado State GOP Assembly, and the teller committee there put together in under 3 weeks, put together a hand count for their elections at that assembly. In the end, they ended up, because of the way the delegates worked out, just having to count the national committee chairwoman or the national committee woman race. But over 100 volunteers poured in on short notice. Many of them identified just days before. They showed up and they spent all day there. There were some procedural issues. They spent all day there without, you know, any kind of complaint, just kind of quietly sat there waiting to do their duty. And then they did it. And it was so beautiful to watch. They hand counted the whole thing transparently. And I heard from a clerk afterwards who had nothing but criticism for it, because, of course, her job right now is to run machines that she doesn't understand and has no insight or authority into. And so she's, you know, she's could only see the potential flaws or risks. But all I saw down there were citizens, you know, being citizens. And that the reason we call it Operation Victory Garden, for if they, just in case there's anybody watching or listening who doesn't know the background, is that's what it was called for the home front in World War One and World War Two, growing their own produce and vegetables to feed themselves and to help with the war effort, because so many of the resources of the nation have been mobilized to support the overseas deployments and the troops overseas, that if they had to divert produce back into the civilian population, then it was going to restrict what was available to move forward to the troops overseas. And so people were converting their, you know, lawns and backyards and everything into little truck gardens and grown the food for themselves. And that took the pressure off of the mobilization effort so that the troops overseas could actually get decent nutrition while they were trying to fight. And it's sort of the same thing, that this is something every citizen has to be able to do for themselves. And if they want to be a citizen and not a subject, then they have to lean into. So everywhere we go, it's the same trend. Everywhere, Linda Rantz does a lot of training out of Missouri. She's Cause America.
She did Missouri. Kelly's training, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just going to spread. And the more people see how easy it is, they'll realize even more how they've been lied to by our institutions. A lot of the public officials are still public servants, although, you know, many of them are not. I would think a good example would be your Secretary of State there in Nebraska. That guy's a real team player, and the people aren't his team.
Yeah, Bob Evenin is a case study of his own. I had some new information shed with me this week about him that I did not know, and I've known Bob now for about 4 years. So, Sean, we're going to take a break at this point, and when we come back, I think you're going to talk about a case that's on its path to the Supreme Court. Sean Smith, my guest, he's joining us from Colorado, and we will continue to get to the root of what is going on with election integrity. More Roll Route on Red Shirt Friday after this. Speaking of getting to the root, that's exactly what nitric oxide is, getting to the root of human health. The real ironic part of that is that the nitric oxide in these tablets come from beets, because beets, root crops, are huge when it comes to the available nitrate. Why did Popeye eat his spinach? Because it was extremely high in nitrate. It all comes back to human health and getting the cardiovascular system working correctly, working as God intended it. Dr. Nathan Bryan has all of the details about the health and the science and what you need to accomplish to have a healthier lifestyle. In this case, we're talking about a daily supplement of nitric oxide. NO2U.com. NO, number two, letter U.com. Go check out his videos. Maybe you want to read his book about functional nitric oxide. This guy is light years ahead of anybody else in the field, and we've been talking about this for 20 years. NO2U.com. NO, number two, letter U.com. Welcome back. Roll Route, Trent Luce, alongside Sean Smith. Bob Evenin's office has threatened counties that say we're going to do a hand count. We'll submit our data through the ESNS machines, but we're going to do a hand count just to verify it. And they come out and threaten the county that says they're going to do that. Like, you can't do that. You'll be criminally liable. Really? No, watch me. And, Sean, just one final thing about that. Any county that is going to do that, that plans to do a hand count, to just verify the machines, which only makes sense. Who would be opposed to just doing a hand count to verify what came back from the Secretary of State is accurate? Anybody that's going to do that, don't say a word. Just do it quietly, because you don't want anybody knowing that your county is going to verify what's going on. That's my two cents.
Yeah, imagine the arrogance, the hubris it requires to threaten citizens and their, you know, closest elected officials. Because they want to do something that every single county and municipality ought to be doing, and which citizens have a perfect, you know, inalienable right to. It's right in the Constitution, isn't it, that we have the right to a Republican form of government, and the right to choose that form of government by our will and consent is meaningless, you know, practically meaningless, and must entail, you know, it's meaningless without, and must entail the entitlement to verify with our own eyes. You know, if you've got to take somebody else's word for it, that the election was fair because it's not transparent, then it's not a Republican form of government. We don't have any obligation to trust public officials. In fact, if you read the founders, you know, contemporaneous writings and like the Federalist Papers, it's really clear if you understand, you know, that human nature and the history of politics and human government, it's really clear that we have an obligation not to take anybody's word for it. That's how you lose your country, is by taking people's word for it. So yeah, I agree with you. And we've seen that nationwide, by the way. Every place that citizens have tried to take back control from this hydra, you know, that the election industry and the other institutions have formed to corrupt our elections, we've gotten the same thing. New Mexico, the Secretary of State and Attorney General went after counties. Colorado, they went after Tina Peters. They went after Dallas Schroeder, the clerk in Elbert County, because he tried to retain election records in his county. They sent a threatening letter to the Rio Blanco County commissioners when they decided to defund maintenance on their voting systems, which was full of absolute lies, by the way. They went after Cochise County, Mojave County in Arizona. They went after, I'm trying to remember the name of the county in New Mexico. It's not Coconino. David Clements will know. I should think.
Was it Otero County?
Could have been. Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah. Otero
County. And I should know that. I used to live in Otero County.
Yvette Harrell should still be the U.S. representative from Otero County, but she's not, thanks to the machines. Anyway, that's why Otero County is so prevalent on my mind. I don't know if you came up with this, Sean, but I'm going to give you credit. If you want to be a citizen instead of a subject, that is exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah, I don't think I did come up with that. I think the framers maybe talked about that a little bit.
But I think you honed in on the exact wording. I'm going to give you credit. Because, mean, I can give Ben Franklin credit for, we've given you a representative republic. It's up to you to keep it. You know, he's pretty widely acclaimed. Nobody stepped up and taken credit for this one. So I'm going with Sean Smith.
Well, we say a lot of words, but it's different to live those words, right? So
isn't that the truth?
When I was commanding 6th Space Warning Squadron and Cape Cod Air Force Station, which is now Cape Cod Space Force Station, it's a giant phased array radar on the East Coast that watches the entire coastline of North America off that eastern seaboard for sea launch ballistic missiles. And then it also tracks, as a corollary, it tracks satellites in low Earth orbit out to about 3,000 nautical miles. And the vigilance is part of the sort of squadron motto, because that's what it's, you know, that's what it does, is it watches out there constantly without interruption. It's the unblinking electronic eye, just shooting radio frequency into space and then watching for returns from things that we need to do something about. And anyway, when I left there, I left some mementos for the people who had just been absolutely phenomenal in their duties that I served with. And the mementos were all engraved with a quote from Thomas Jefferson. And the quote is, "Eternal vigilance is the price of liberty." And it is. And, you know, we stopped watching. I'm not blaming anybody else more than myself. It's mea culpa. You know, I was not paying any attention to domestic enemies, but Lord Acton was right. You know, power corrupts, and we've seen it. Boy, we're seeing it. So taking your eye off that ball, as we have, because we were, you know, busy, for the most part, conservatives and libertarians, independents, just want to live their lives with, you know, free from government interference. But, and I don't remember if it was Seneca, but, you know, if you will not serve in government, and if you will not take interest in the affairs of government, then you will be ruled by bad people who do. And that's what's come about, right? And so we're trying to reverse it now. We're sort of up at the edge of the cliff as they're trying to destroy our economy and trying to destroy food supply, or at least destroy anything that they're not in control of. And it all starts for me. It starts, I mean, there, in a sense, it all starts with culture. But now we're at the rubber meets the road. And for me, it's all about the elections. That's why I stopped doing other work. And I just do election integrity work now. So I was going to tell you about the case of the Supreme Court. So there's a petition for writ of certiorari. That's basically a request from petitioners that a higher court review the work or the conclusions of a lower court. And it's, I think the Latin translation is to make sure, you know, to be sure. And so what it is a request that the Supreme Court of the United States review the ruling of the appeals court in the state of Arizona, which upheld a lower, which was, I think, a district court ruling in Arizona from Judge Tucci about the Lake and Fincham versus Fontes, and I think Hobbs case. And that case was a pre-election 2022 petition for an injunction. It was a complaint and petition for injunction against use of electronic voting systems in the elections there, under the premise and with the assertion that the voting systems were not reliable because they lacked integrity, that there were a lot of uncertainties in them. There was a lot of evidence of inaccuracy and unreliability, not from a sort of maintenance standpoint, but from an integrity standpoint. And that judge, Tucci, threw the case out, called it frivolous, threw it out, and said that it was basically baseless, that it was speculative, that there was no injury. And it was it's a perfect example of what we've seen with so many election integrity cases. Rachel Alexander there in Arizona has done a phenomenal job looking back through the election integrity cases that were brought prior to and after the November 2020 election, including through some of the 22 elections. And then she also covers, you know, the disbarment hearings for like Dr. John Eastman and for Jeff Clark, former DOJ official. And she's done a great job of summarizing and explaining how a lot of those cases were thrown out on this unbelievable. I call it the Venn diagram. You know, you have cases that are moot because no injuries occurred. And then you have cases that are dismissed on standing for laches because the injury has occurred and came too late to petition. And those Venn diagrams seem to overlap almost perfectly so that there's no space where a citizen or a candidate or anybody else can say, okay, we're on that razor's edge of in between moot and laches where we have standing. And of course, those are procedural tricks. So this Supreme Court case has brought new evidence and asked the Supreme Court, or this petition has asked the Supreme Court to review the very real evidence of corruption in the voting systems in Maricopa County, Arizona, which is, of course, dominant in Arizona. It's electorally dominant. It's over 4 million people. It doesn't really, in some sense, matter what happens in the rest of the state election, you know, when it comes to statewide candidates or in federal office. Maricopa is, I think, fourth largest county in the United States, and it just absolutely looms above every other county in Arizona. So if you solve the problem there, or if you corrupt it there, then it's true across the state. So the new evidence that was brought was not even available because the public officials and the vendors had hidden the information from the public prior to the discovery by the forensic team that was supporting the legal effort. But it's basically that they changed the software on their tabulators, did not test them. So a tabulator, you know, is a scanner tabulator. That's what you feed the paper ballot into, and it scans it and turns that scan into an electronic representation of the votes called a cast vote record. And all the cast vote records for an election are tabulated together. They're tallied up. And that's what is supposedly producing your election results. But they effectively sabotaged their tabulators, their own tabulators there, by running, illegally running the wrong software. It's called a machine behavioral setting, a configuration file on the tabulators. And then they lied to the court that they had properly tested those systems prior to the election in accordance with their own statutes. They did not. And so that among many other issues there, including signature issues, you know, and provenance issues with the ballots, like where tens of thousands of ballots just appeared over at the vendor that the county was using, the Runbeck election systems or services that they were using for signature verification and for printing, et cetera. So that's new information that's been presented to the Supreme Court, and the team is just waiting now to hear back on whether the court is going to accept that and review it and issue a ruling. And they could do a lot of different things in their ruling. But so there's progress there. There's also been a lot of progress in Georgia with the state election board. So I think the chairman of one of the county boards resigned. The state election board there got confirmation from their state senate that they had the authority to investigate the Secretary of State. And they are now hearing complaints that are, you know, 3 and 4 year old complaints for which they had evidence and just wouldn't rule on. So there's that. Up in Wisconsin, Peter Brunegger has brought out tremendous amount of information there with his team about corruption, both from the campaign finance side and in their conduct of elections. Patrick Kolbeck has just filed criminal referral for the president and CEO, I think, of Dominion. John Poulos, for lying about their systems. And I think that, you know, that's the fate that awaits a lot of these individuals. What we don't know is how long it's going to take for that kind of justice. I could go through, New York Citizens Audit with their voter rolls and other cases that are being brought. But
we're going to go to a break. Last segment, Roll Route, just ahead. Certified Piedmontese can be found on the web, cpbeef.com. Welcome back, Roll Route. Trent Luce alongside Sean Smith joining us from Colorado. You mentioned New York. I had Marnie on a couple of weeks ago. I applaud the work that she's doing and what you just walked us through. But I don't want anybody, Sean, to say, okay, well, the court systems are going to take care of this. I don't have any faith in the judicial system taking care of this. What I do have faith in is that when enough people finally show up and get loud and say, we demand accountability, that we will actually get this. So I don't want to have anybody take their foot off of the gas pedal towards a court system trying to undo this illegal activity. But I want people to get more loud and more involved at the county level. Don't sit here and say, oh, what's going on with the presidential race? Show up at your county courthouse and have these discussions with your clerk. Everybody needs to do it.
Absolutely. Yeah. My clerk, our district attorney. So I'm with you. I don't have faith in courts. I have hope always. Mm-hmm. Although I don't need encouragement and I can't be discouraged. You know, once you see that's the thing is when you've been military, especially when you've been an officer, your job is to just see your duty and do it. Nobody needs to, inspire you. You can't require it. Your job is to bring that, not to, have it brought to you. So I also have no faith in courts. But people need to understand the American people, citizens, not the non-citizens we've been invaded by, but and at the invitation of the current administration, the regime, I would call it. But citizens need to understand and internalize the idea that we are no more the subjects of courts than we are the subjects of, a monarchy or the subjects of 535 tyrants in Congress. They're all our servants. Now, they're not any of us individually our servants, but they're all of us collectively our servants. And we have to wake up and demand, right? The people must be awakened. And then the people must be outspoken about what they demand. And to do that, they have to be well-informed. And that was always the dream of the framers and what they understood would be a requirement, that you would have a well-informed public that was engaged in their own governance. We veered away from it, and there's an immense cost to be paid, and we're paying it now. I would like nothing more than to lay down my duty, but I won't do that again. I was naive. I like to say I thought as a child and spoke as a child, when I thought mm-hmm. that I could leave my duty behind me and just come back and have a life free from that. There's no such thing if you want to be a citizen.
So when I learned, and there was no difference between the Dominion machines and the ESNS machines, obviously Nebraska, South Dakota, North Dakota have ESS machines, Colorado has the Dominion machines, but I found out that my county didn't pay for it. It was provided by the state, and every county in Nebraska is provided by the state these machines and the laptop to accompany it and the jump drive. And so I'm like, wait a minute, that's a red flag. Why would something be given to my county? And so I started digging into that, and that led me to the whole, well, that plus the tutelage of Jessica Pulma is absolutely phenomenal. But anyway, the HAVA Act, Help Americans Vote Act, and the hanging chad that obviously was just a ploy to get everybody to want to move over to something that could be manipulated and uniformly manipulated. And then you look at the millions and millions of dollars that continues in the past 5 years. I think it's over $350 million that's gone to the HAVA Act to make sure everybody has a chance to vote. And we're going to give you this little tabulator. It's going to have all these wonderful things, and it's not connected to the internet. And you just take your jump drive from there over to the computer, and you do that 12 times. Rick Weibel taught me to some places do that 12 times. And I'm like, if you put a jump drive in one component and take it to another component, it's like mixing two people with a virus. You have the potential of spreading a virus.
Exactly.
Oh, no. Yeah. Oh, no. They're secure. Sean, they're secure. Don't you worry about it.
You're right. There's no difference in, in principle between the voting systems. The five largest vendors are all offering very, very comparable systems. They all use commercial off-the-shelf systems. They all use some kind of removable memory. I would hasten to say there may be exceptions in some counties, but by and large, especially in all the largest counties, they all have wireless network devices embedded in them in their computers. I've verified them in ES&S machines. I've verified them in clear ballot machines, which is what Colorado uses in a couple counties, and then Dominion in the other 62 counties. And I've verified them in Unison machines. They've been shipped with these wireless networking devices. They all have wired network devices. But then it doesn't matter when you, as you say, move portable media between them. That's what people, ignorant people will repeat what they've been told without understanding it. And the public and a lot of public servants, I think there are still a lot of faithful public servants at local levels, that have been elected to be clerks or whatnot. And I think, they think they've been elected. They may not actually have been elected. And the day's coming where if we don't get rid of those machines, everybody is not going to be elected. But anyway, they've been told that they have an air gap. But the moment you introduce some external media and move it between machines, especially between those machines and some that are connected to other networks or to the internet, or which have, connections to something like the Albert monitoring devices. When I look at Albert, which is what Center for Information Security provides as a public-private partnership with CISA to municipalities, states, county governments for, they call it for security, for election security. When I look at it, all I see is a command and control network for somebody. Instead of having to penetrate each system individually, you just go through the one centralized system. And I have no hope or confidence or trust for that matter in CISA or CIS that they have not been corrupted, because we've seen even, the cybersecurity and infrastructure security agency, the CISA within the federal government, their own servers were compromised by a supply chain hack, by the SolarWinds hack, two compromises actually. And they didn't know it for almost a year. And they never found it themselves. They had to be told to look what to look for by a private company that found it on their own servers. So when those are the people responsible to protect your critical election infrastructure and they can't protect their own systems, I'm kind of done. It's like if you see a builder and their house looks like hell and it's fallen down, you don't let them build your house.
Why is that corner caved in over there, Sam? I don't know. We got a big win that
Yeah, it's a feature
Hey,
part.
it's a funny week for us. It's not funny. It's a very ironic week for us to be talking about this. As of yesterday, last night evening, I haven't checked yet today. Dundee County, Nebraska, six counties, including Pennington County, where Rapid City's at in South Dakota, and Las Vegas, their 911s have been hijacked. They can't even protect the 911 system, let alone the voting system.
No, you cannot. And people should look into the involvement of the company Ericsson in their emergency services. But 911 and other emergency response services have also been increasingly tied again to this public-private partnership with FirstNet. And FirstNet involvement in our elections is something else that deserves a lot of scrutiny, because as more and more states and counties and municipalities have moved to electronic poll books, they've been connecting them through FirstNet. So now you have put an internet point of presence, typically with cradle point routers, in close proximity to the voting systems, which aren't supposed to be connected to any external network. And if they are, it immediately violates their certification, which is hard to do because the certifications are extraordinarily weak. The testing is weak. The standards are weak. So if you violate that, boy, you've really done something. It's like taking a steel anvil and splitting it in half. You've achieved something, right? If you can figure out a way to violate their standards because they're so bad. But anyway, putting that point of presence, that internet router, and then connecting it to cellular networks, especially ones that immediately go into a public-private partnership, makes it extraordinarily difficult for citizens to monitor and get access to those records. And so that, as we know, is just a recipe for fraud, right? If you provide means, motive, and opportunity, you create a crime. You might as well have done it yourself.
And I'm just reminding everybody at the local level, it is a federal law that they keep the paper records for 22 months, and you have access to those through the Freedom of Information Act. Oh, wait, when was the last time you heard one of those granted, Sean?
Yeah, very rarely. You know, I've personally done Freedom of Information Act and public record requests within Colorado for just routine records that, of course, the public had already paid for. I had already paid for and had the attorney general of the state give me a quote back of $4 million plus dollars. You know, about, I want to say maybe 8% of their annual budget, they wanted me to pay them for records that they produced with public money and which should have been available to me. It's supposed to be a nominal fee. So, yeah, it's not just the paper records, by the way. So Department of Justice, I think it was guidance on post-election audits that they published in 2021. And what they were trying to do, you know, corruptly, was to dissuade and constrain audits by citizens and by state governments. But one of the things that they confirmed in their document in this 2021 post-election audit guidance from Department of Justice, Federal Department of Justice, was that electronic records are election records. And when you look at the voting system standards, what you'll see is that when you use general purpose computers, like which are the type like the Dell and Hewlett Packard computers, so Dell is used in the ES&S systems, Dell is used in Dominion, Dell is used in everything but Hardiner Civic. Hardiner Civic uses Hewlett Packard computers. Not that it matters. They're all built, you know, mostly overseas, mostly in China with Chinese components and Chinese workers. But anyway, when you use electronic systems, if they're running any software that is election system software, which would include all your tabulators and your touchscreen devices and the central management systems, every electronic file on there that's necessary to reconstruct the activities on that system, which is pretty much all logging, needs to be turned on those systems and retained. All of that is supposed to be retained for federal elections for 22 months. That is not happening anywhere in the country. In fact, voting system vendors are prescribing configurations for their voting systems, which routinely and systematically destroy that electronic record. And if you don't have that record that shows the connection between the paper ballot and the reported results, then your reported results are not certifiable, and nobody should be certified without those records.
Sean Smith bringing us the problems and the solution. You know, I know everybody wanted to spend our whole time talking about the solution. The solution's simple. Look in the mirror. The person you're seeing is who needs to stand up, and it's cause for America and our future that's at stake. Thank you, Sean. Good to see you.
Thank you, Trent. You too. Take care.
We've journeyed down that path, connecting food producers to food consumers. For Sean Smith, I'm Trent Luce. Both of us reminding you that all roads do lead to a roll route. Don't forget Apache Sprayers, technology, service, innovation like every farmer needs. SimpsonFarm.com. Have a great weekend, and we'll convene back here on Monday.